once I accepted, like, that's my constitution. I see these other people who can go in with these ghost adventures and be like, this house is haunted and we're going to summon so-and-so ghost. And I'm like, no, no, I do not want to do that. Mm-mm. And there's people who help people cross over and do that. And I'm like, nope, I didn't have great experiences with all that. So my psychic suggested doing the death doula.
Part one of our interview with Melissa Coons, she left us at a cliffhanger, an angry ghost who is physically accosting her in her sleep. This encounter taught her to set psychic boundaries. Mentors arrived and death moved into her closet, and she knew that essential purpose would center around helping people grieve those passing over. Mel shares her insight into synchronicities, flow, timeline shifts, the power of failure, trusting her guides, distrusting her guides, where guides even come from, and how a 9-to-5 job can actually be helpful.
So I was asleep and I was having this dream about her. She was very angry, very angry. Wouldn't talk to me, but there was just anger seething towards me. And then I felt these arms wrap around me, like physically wrap around me. And I immediately woke up and was like, nope, nope. It's one, no touching, no touching. And so I did all my like cleansing. I was like, that's not happening. I'm not okay with that. And that's how I found the Great British Baking Show, because I couldn't go back to sleep and I needed something nice.
And okay, it's so wholesome.
The show is so successful because it's all of us insomniacs, all of us witches being messed with in our sleep. We need Paul Hollywood to calm us down.
That is right. Talk to me about bread.
Wow, that's kind of terrifying, Mel. Almost every psychic medium I know has a story of being physically accosted. There's a lot of choking stories, but there's also a lot of the constriction, like around the chest, which is also kind of sort of a choking story. But so like, what was her intention, or did you not even stop to think? You're just like, nope, I'm out.
I didn't even stop to be like, what are you wanting? What do you do? Because at that point, I'm like, whatever your intention is.
Will a hug make everything better?
I'm like, you're so angry that this feels like an attack. So I'm going to treat it as an attack, because you're not approaching me respectfully. You're not respecting my boundaries. You're not verbalizing what you need. You're just angry. And whatever your intentions are, I don't know. So I'm just going to protect myself. Because I err on the side of great caution, where I'm like, yeah, if you're not going to be clear, then you need to go back and try again. That's just...
Of course.
I'm not going to sit here and be like, okay, demon dog, do you want to come home? What do you want? Use your words. Are you okay?
You bit me, but like, I know you need something.
You need to maul my face? Is that going to make you feel better? Yeah.
Get it all out, honey. Get it all out.
I'm here for you.
Well, so when psychics first start like getting used to this capacity, because that is what happens. Like, you're a bright light and both good and bad things can see you, and them's the facts. And then it's up to you to sort of figure out what pieces and parts of it you even want to deal with, and then how do you deal with it? So how long would you say it took you before you understood? And did you have any mentorship to help, like, this is this thing that's happening? And they'd be like, oh, okay, so here's what's up.
So it took years. This was by no means, this is a journey over the span of at least a decade, if not 15 years. Because I feel like, okay, my journey probably started at 19. That's when I truly was like, okay, I'm not insane and there's things I can actually do about this, and was with other people who could teach me, show me, and then was exploring more. I've never had one mentor, but I've always been able to find people I could ask questions and connect with, and who could tell me. So one, she's one of my psychic readers and dear friend as well now, because I've been seeing her for years and I love and adore her. And it was the greatest honor when we got to the point where we could swap readings, because she was there for me while I was learning and getting confident. And so she would tell me, like, you're going to do this professionally. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not good enough. I would hate to channel the wrong, like, mess up a message that I channeled for someone and give someone the wrong information. So it took me years to get over that blockage. So for other people, it may not take them as long as it took me. I had a lot of insecurity and a lot of doubts that I had to overcome. And that took a long time. And I kept shutting it down. So there were years that I didn't do anything because I was like, this just isn't convenient. It doesn't work, again, with the life that I'm trying to build. But every time they're like, no, you don't get to do that. Sorry. You're our oracle. Yeah. We need you to be part of this.
Wow.
And so just getting to the point of accepting myself and the calling took a while, whereas others may not have that struggle. And then, being able to ask people, just this is having these conversations, like, this is what I'm experiencing. Oh yeah. When you do that, you just need to do this. Oh, okay. Then I'd go and try it. And then the biggest part was, and when I mentor somebody or provide that of guidance towards somebody, like, this is what I do for me, but we're all different in the way we interact with our skills and that world is different and it'll vary. So my tools are not going to be a one for one for you. You're going to want to find your version of it, and that's what'll work. So that took time, taking their tools that I was being given and being like, okay, how does this work for me?
Well, and that plays into the building of the self-confidence. And like, as an early witch, I'm still learning what tools are mine and how to use them. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because it takes a long, long time to get to that point of knowing what the heck you're doing.
I mean, like 18 months, Jenny, and then you'll be up and running. Like, a year and a half.
I wish.
Well, I do feel like the younger generations, like, are coming to it, like, way faster than Mel, I don't know what you identify as, Gen X or millennial or whatever, but it does seem like the younger generations are stepping into it with a freedom that, I didn't have. I don't know.
I identify as a millennial, technically, but my heart and everything feels like a Gen Xer. But I would say I think that that's part of the road that we paved, that now there are these resources available that you had to go to, like, the dark corner of the bookstore where nobody was, and people would give you dirty looks if you wanted to get them. And now it's so much more acceptable. Like, everybody knows where their metaphysical shop is, and everybody knows at least the one witch on the block that they could go to, and that one person for that tarot reading, and everybody's dabbling in it themselves, and it's much more in the open now. And I think that's why these younger generations are able to just get there faster, is because we, as these older generations, paved the way, and we had to feel out that social construct to be like, okay, where is it safe? Because that's been a big battle through my entire journey, is I know that I've been drowned, stoned, burned as a witch hundreds of times in past lives. And that innate fear is in me that, like, for a long time, I was like, when is the crowd with the pitchforks coming? When are they going to come get me? And I'm like, oh, wait, that's frowned upon now.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't mean it won't happen, but.
And it's interesting because, like, you two, both Trey and Mel, both, this wasn't as much of a choice. Like, you both had psychic and ghost and crazy metaphysical experiences from a young age. I didn't, like, and I don't want to say I've chosen to go down this way, but, like, you know, I feel like my generation is a lot more open to these questions. So there's a lot of us who this is our first life practicing magic, possibly, and I don't know how to determine that kind of thing, but, like, I definitely wasn't born with all this stuff, you know, and some of it's really hard for me to attune to, and some of it is getting better now, and I'm starting to understand, oh, spirits do talk through me, it's just different. But, like, It's really interesting.
And so what I would say to you, Jenny, and I say to other new people on this path, because I do, one of my roles in this lifetime is I am a catalyst. So if I come into your life, surprise everybody listening, you're going to have a massive tower moment and an awakening, and suddenly your life is going to shift and change, and it's going to clear out the old so that you can actually move forward toward what will make you feel fulfilled. And it took a while for me to realize that that was the role that I play in this world, because inevitably I would meet people and then suddenly we'd be having a good time. And I'm like, oh gosh, I really enjoy this dynamic. And then within like a couple months, everything would start changing. And I'm like, why? And it turns out,
interesting,
because it was time to change. And me just coming and interacting with people, suddenly they were like, oh, you know what? I don't really want to be doing this anymore. Or I want to do this and this. And so it's all good changes coming your way. But what I tell people new on this journey is that you are born with it. Trey and I just had more open to it. So you may be starting the book at chapter one, whereas we started at chapter 20. But it's the same book.
Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And I mean, I did have an experience earlier when you were talking about, you know, in like your guides talking through you, because I have a lot of that intuition come in and it feels like my own thoughts. And then you're like, it's your thoughts being filtered from the guides. And I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's great to be talking to chapter 20ers though.
And I don't necessarily claim that for myself. I have no idea what chapter. I think my problem is that I was in a different book entirely, and I had to wander my way like back over into something. You know, and I think that, I mean, Jenny, just because you're a part of this, and so that already, like, even if you're not seeing it in yourself, it's that call to Scotland that you were heralding, and it was, you know, finding that book in the bookstore, you know, about Hecate that changed your life, and, you know, starting to speak to people about this stuff. And then, hey, doing a podcast and coming right out about it. So, so Mel, so you're in a current transformation.
Yes.
And of course, I always like to talk to people about, so you have like a daily conversation going on with your guides, and I feel like you're one of the people who are more in touch with their demands of you, because it does seem to be like a lot of demands that they make of you. Not that shirt, you know, no, not those shoes. What are you thinking? You know, like even kind of on that level. And so for the last couple of years, they told you to go in this direction, but then it ended up being that direction and things were like very confusing. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I also think that there's the impression that if we hear a message, it's like, ding, that's it. And then you don't have to worry about hearing from anybody again for another year. Just do what they said. And we'll let you know when it's time to take a left. Right. Not the case with you.
No. And so that, so yes, I'm currently in a transition. I'm relocating out of Colorado to North Carolina. So I'm moving out of state for the first time in my life. And I'm currently residing with my parents in a different state right now. So it's it's all stepping stones, and I'll get there eventually. So going back to, you'd asked me about the death doula. And so I had really resisted to the mediumship duties for a while because I was so freaked out from these other experiences I had. I once had, and I know I'm going to say this, I'll come back to it so I can finish answering your question. I had death live in my closet for a few months, and that was terrifying. And Hades is one of my patron gods, so I do have a close relationship, but the way that situation went down was very spooky. And so there was a lot where I'm like, I don't know that I have the emotional ability to do what you're asking me to do. I know there's a lot of other people who can, and they have a different constitution than I do. And I just had to really admit, because I am a Leo, and to admit weakness was, is like, no, never. But I'm like, you know what? I'm very soft and squishy inside. And I just had to, once I accepted, like, that's my constitution. I see these other people who can go in with these ghost adventures and be like, this house is haunted and we're going to summon so-and-so ghost. And I'm like, no, no, I do not want to do that. Mm-mm. And there's people who help people cross over and do that. And I'm like, nope, I didn't have great experiences with all that. So my psychic suggested doing the death doula. And I looked into it, and at first it was like, ooh, I don't know that I have the constitution for certain aspects of being a death doula. But then I got to the grief coaching, and that was something that I talked to my gods and my guides about, where I was like, you know, is there a way that I can help the living with death? Because we all grieve. We all have to transform and pass through things and let go. And I was like, their souls matter now just as much as they matter on the other side. So can I do that work here as opposed to on the other side of the veil? And so that's where the grief coaching came in, is it opened up that door. And I got a series of very clear signs over the course of a year when I was resisting. The amount of people I met in the funeral business that year was alarming. And like, one was a bar, two were bartenders and had degree in mortuary science. One had been an undertaker apprentice, and now we're talking over a Chardonnay. And so I was like, okay, I'm getting guided to open a funeral home and really focus on the memorial and grief services aspect of it. And so I looked into what all that required and started doing it. And I made it very clear with my guides, like, I'm not just jumping into this. There's a lot of money on the line. There's a lot of stability on the line. If I'm doing this, it needs to give back to me, because I'm willing to give to others, but I can't be depleted. And my guides, like you were saying, Trey, were like, no, no, it's good. Yeah, no, take that leap. No, do this. Yeah, do this. No, it's time to apply for that loan. It's time to, yeah, go ahead and sign that lease on that rental place. Yeah, no, it's okay. Everything's going to work out. Oh, it's going to be there. And then as I got into it, I was fine tuning the pieces that I liked as well as the pieces that I don't like. Just, you know, same with life. You know, you find what's for you and what's not for you. And it became very clear that this endeavor was not going to work. And I had to sit down with my guides where it was like, I can keep pushing forward. I have support, but I don't necessarily want to be taking advantage of that support in this way. I really wanted to do this, I guess I'm going to say on my own, but it wasn't on my own. And I didn't want to be a financial burden to people. And that's where it was getting. And then the more I was looking into it, it was like, okay, what I would have to do to make this work would be pulling long workaholic hours, just trying to get this off the ground. And when something is for you, it just flows. And because at the start of it, it was remarkable how things were syncing up, that I couldn't drag my feet because I'm like, oh, damn it, that worked out. Damn it, that worked out too. All right, they're really not letting me procrastinate on this. And so when things stopped working out, I had to have that moment with them where I'm like, you guided me to do this. You told me to do this. You told me to put money on the line. You told me to enter into this contract. And now you're taking it away. And the answer was because part of it was because my soul had shifted, and I'd shifted onto a different timeline of the goals that I was wanting to achieve, of what was really important to me. And what was really important to me were my personal relationships. And I didn't want to be a workaholic all the time. I didn't want to be, I had identified to my guides the things I didn't want to do. And that's when things started falling apart, because it was like, oh, this isn't really what you, it's no longer in alignment with what you want or where you were.
Right.
So I had to get out of it. And getting out of it flowed very easily. I am so grateful. I had luckily gotten into business with the right people. and it was okay. It was okay. And I know Trey and I had had a very meaningful conversation because a lot of people kept telling me, no, you didn't fail. No, don't say that. And I'm like, no, it failed. And that's okay. It's okay that it failed. Yeah. We can't keep using that as like a horrible connotation. I still tried. I still did everything I could. And you know what? It failed. It didn't work out. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. I will move forward. I'm okay with it because it failed because it wasn't for me anymore. But I got through it. I'm still an ordained minister. I still preside over funerals. I'm still a death doula. I'm still a grief coach. I still have all those things that I did want. And I got rid of the things I didn't. And so I still get [S2] Nice. [S1] To do that work. And I get to do it in a more flexible capacity, which, as we already talked about, that's what works the best for me, is when, in terms of this metaphysical work, emotional work, grief work, I need to be very flexible with it so that I can set yeah. better boundaries and not have my money and livelihood dependent upon it, because then I shut down. So when it's just something that, like, yes, this is what I can do and a purpose I can fulfill, everything flows wonderfully for me. But the minute my livelihood depends on it, no. No, too many blocks, too much anxiety, it doesn't work. So that's why I need my 9-to-5.
You know, I think that's part of the, I mean, there's a couple things in there, but one is, especially for older and Jenny, you can speak to this, but I feel like for Gen Xers especially, we were so removed from our intuition and from that higher self, like giving us, you know, the kind of input of what to go do. That much of our life was, I don't know, just sitting in a cave and, you know, waiting for something to feel better. And so much of our progress was, taking those tiny little pieces of saying, well, this kind of part of the lifestyle, you know, is what I do want. And I would like to not have, for example, a boss who forgets to pay me, or I don't want to be involved in legal stuff because for whatever reason, legal stuff just freaks me out, right? So it just felt like such mud to slog through. So even when there was like, this is the thing I want to do, we were still blocking ourselves from being able to access the easy path through it. And I think that makes a lot of people hesitate in their own experiences because they're like, well, I can't possibly be intuitive. I can't be psychic because look how hard everything is for me. Mm. But this is a great story, you know, that you tell, Mel, because things were really hard. That was a really, really hard time in your life where you were doubting every darn thing. And was it in hindsight that you were able to look back and say, no, I did all the right steps in the right sequence? Or do you feel like you were kind of, you had abandoned yourself and didn't know what to do until you finally did?
At that moment, there were other times in my life where I definitely felt what you just described, where I, felt abandoned and, oh God, everything's horrible. And so because I had gone through that and worked at really building trust between me and my guides, I did tell them, like, this was not okay. I don't want to do it this way again.
Some trust was lost.
Trust was lost. And because I trusted you and I trusted what you told me, and now I'm doubting that I'm hearing you correctly, and I'm doubting my abilities, and like, mm-hmm. what the heck?
So bring me $1 million and everything will be all right.
Right. And that was when I also learned that they're not infallible. And that was really, I know this is going to be like not what people want to hear, because everybody wants to believe that our guides are, you know, always there for, they are there for our higher interest. But depending on who is on your guide team, and this is something that a lot of people know, is you get to choose your guides. So I had one particular guide who recently got fired, who at the time had been in a position and was, I believe, an ancestor of mine trying to work certain things out. And so he was creating situations that were undeservingly difficult, where even the rest of my guides, where I would get through it and I'd be like, what the heck was that? And they're like, yeah, that wasn't supposed to hit you that hard. we needed to like test you and see where you were at about something. But you're right. That wasn't supposed to take you down for 2 weeks into a sopping puddle of tears and everything. And so this particular guide was kind of stacking things against me. I got through it. I came out the other side. And so that guide got relocated and then lately has just been fired because wasn't doing his duty. And so that's where you do, you can say like, hey, your advice is not serving me. This isn't where I want to be going. I need you to get swapped out with someone else.
Yep. Wild. Firing your spirit guides. Wild.
I know.
I call it a reassignment. Please reassign this person. In fact, I will do clearings pretty routinely. I use a dowsing thingy where I'll be like, you know, clear out all negative spirit guides from, you know, my spirit team. And it does this exactly. And when it stops, it will take out the folks that aren't of light and love, whose purpose with me is not entirely beneficial, that are only there to work with me. Like, that's a big piece of it. It's like they have to be there just for you. They can't be serving. And look at that. I just cleared my negative spirit guides just like that. Now, I'm not as good as you at being able to like see, oh, Jenny, tell her about your aura photo and your spirit guides.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I have the ability to go grab it right now. I guess I can. But we found out, I took an aura photo recently with my good friend who I'm actually seeing later this afternoon. And I found out that I have like 4 or 5 spirit guides. And then I also had like some of my necklaces that were there, or they just lined up with that. But like, I've never, cause I was going to ask, like, how do you go about ascertaining who these guides are beyond just communication with them? Cause I know for a fact, and at this point I feel like I can just say it. I know for a fact, one of the guides is my grandpa. Like, my dead grandpa is definitely one of my spirit guides. I don't know who the heck the other 4 are.
Cause they were literal orbs over her head.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like it. It was really neat.
That is awesome. To figure out who they are, you can ask. That is something that a lot of people don't realize because, I mean, you can ask. You can tell them how you want them to communicate with you, too. I told that to one of my clients, and she was like, what? I was like, yeah, mine communicate through my phone. So anytime my phone vibrates, it's a confirmation that I'm saying the correct message, or I'll hear dings or anything. Because I told them, I was like, I need something in the physical to let me know I'm on the right track. So I'll get weather alerts and text messages and ring doorbells. And so it's been going off like crazy. They're like, yep, that's right. Yep, that's right. And so I'll hear doorbells, a car will drive by, there'll be a horn and all those. I'm like, yeah, all right. Those are my guides telling me, like, we're confirming the message you're getting. And so that's one reason why I'm a verbal processor. So I talk to myself all the time as I'm channeling.
Me too.
And so that I can hear those confirmations. And they come through all the time, which I'm so grateful for, because that was something I needed to let me know, like, yes, you're here and I'm hearing you correctly. And that helps me get rid of the doubt of like, oh my God, I'm insane. And these are just voices in my head.
Wow.
And so you can ask them to do that for whatever works best for you. Like, this is a co-relationship. And you have that power, that right to be like, you know what? I really receive messages better this way. And then I can go up to them and be like, you know what? I don't want to learn lessons this way anymore. I would really like to learn lessons this way. And that's actually a mark of where you are on your journey too. And where you are in your healing to be able to be like, okay, I'm done learning that way. I'm not going to receive lessons like that anymore. I'm now going to receive lessons like this. And this is how I want to learn. And you can direct your path that way. And one of the messages I channeled with them with the whole funeral home situation was they admitted, they're like, well, it seemed like it was something that was really perfect for you. And we didn't realize that that wasn't what you were really wanting. And part of that is because I'm so good at putting on a mask, a facade, bravado. Even to my spirit guide team, they're like, it took us a while to get through your walls to be like, oh, she really, nope, that's really not in alignment with what she's actually wanting. And so that's gotten, that was a lesson for me that I'm still working on advocating, what do I really want? As opposed to just, yep, I can do it. I'll plow through. I'll make it happen.
See, you are a Gen Xer at heart. No. That's so Gen X of you. Yeah.
Wow.
So Jenny, maybe that's your assignment this week, is to ask for signs.
You didn't even have to assign it to me. I'm already there. Okay, like, just with what I've been through the past 2 weeks, it's the natural next step, of course. So yeah, wow. Very good. Very interesting, because I have a lot of doubt surrounding my connection with my spirit guides and my connection with my witchiness, obviously, because a lot of this is still new to me. But I also have never just straight up asked them who they were before. Like, I haven't, you know, I'm like, I don't know if that'd work, but I'm like, I've never tried.
Yeah. And I have some who didn't want to tell me, and that's okay. And, they like the air of mystery. So they can give me like a, I'm from this past life kind of thing. That was something I learned from, another psychic that I used to go to. She was really amazing. She was Native American, and until she told me, it hadn't occurred to me. She was like, oh, you have a huge spirit guide team. I'm like, yes, I know, they're very prominent. I'm so grateful. But it is a lot of voices. And she was like, oh yeah, you have some from a past life when you were a Native American, and you have some from these past lives. And I just kind of looked at her. She goes, your spirit guide team isn't from just this incarnation, it's from all incarnations of you. So you can tap into,
I had no idea,
any, from any timeline, from any existence, from anywhere, to come help you.
By the way, it can also be other planets, because we have incarnated, not just
correct
on Earth. So some folks have, you know, you hear Palladians and Lemurians bandied about a lot, you know, they can absolutely be on your spirit team.
And interdimensional.
I like to throw in, like, say it again.
I said interdimensional.
Yeah, interdimensional.
Wow.
You probably have some fae, Mel, do you think?
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things I had to learn was, and I'm quite bossy about it, because I can hear, like, I'll actually have conversations where I can have words come through, but so much of what comes through for me is symbology or visuals. And I think this is part of the film thing, is I'm a, you know, kind of a visually oriented person. And Jenny, this is, you know, kind of a tip for you is, if you're getting visuals, like, don't doubt them, because they're going to be meaningful if you engage with them and kind of like, well, what does that mean? And keep letting them unfurl in your head, because that is another way that that information is coming in. And I feel like a lot of storytellers end up having that visual thing, even more than just a dialogue going on.
Yeah, the visual is a very part, and that is something I've learned to trust and attune to, and I wouldn't be a writer without it, and asparagus for a whole nother episode, but yeah, okay, that makes sense. That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, this was so delightful.
Well, Mel. And I won't lie, I know we're running out of time, and I'm sorry, but my guides, now that I'm understanding, I do want to know more just about being a death doula and what that entails, and just like, what it's like, because that was a big part, is it's like, oh, a death doula, like, I have to know. But I know this is going to be a nightmare to edit later, and that's fine, but I'm sorry.
No, everybody, as soon as you say it, everybody's like, what's that? Because it's a scary sounding term, and I like to think I'm not a scary looking person, so
definitely not.
So people are kind of like, you're a what? So death doula, if you've heard of a birthing doula, it's the same thing, but on the other side. So a birthing doula helps the mother bring the baby into the earth, into the world, you know, with the pregnancy, the birthing process, the afterbirth, postpartum. That's what a birthing doula will do, or a midwife. So the death doula is, it's the soul exiting. It's the opposite end. So there's different aspects, but it is preparing for the end. So I do like a lot of funeral planning, and these are questions that you need to think of and ask, as well as just what is the body going to go through, and what is the spirit kind of going to go through, and how do you prepare yourself and people around you? So death doulas are often there for like hospice, people who are elderly, who know that this is coming, and kind of can give you that this is what's going to happen, this is what you're going to see. I've never physically been there when somebody has passed, but through my training, there was a whole section chapter about that, and the reason I don't want to be there through that is because of my mediumship and that doorway that I'm like, this isn't about me, and I don't want to take that on, and I'd rather I can prep you and then I can come after. But there are other death doulas who are way okay.
She's pre-production and she's post-production. That's right. She is not production.
I am not production. And then primarily what I do afterward is the grief and processing the grief and unloading those emotions and what to do with them. And then I like to take it the step further where we all experience, yes, there's the physical death, but then there's a lot of other deaths that we have, much like the tarot card, where it's death, rebirth, and transformation. So something has come to an end, whether it's a marriage, a job, a career, a friendship. And this is all grief that we just carry with us. And most of the time we don't process. And so,
especially Americans.
Yes. Though that's where I do a lot of my death doula grief coaching, is unpacking that so that you can finally release it and live the life that you want to live.
Wow. So you're getting really like emotionally intimate with people and very close with a lot of these people, especially the ones, you know, actually passing and before and after and getting close with their families. Sounds intense, even though you're not going to be there for the actual passing itself, which would be way more intense in my opinion. But like, you know, it all just sounds really intense.
It can be. And that's where grounding and cleansing energy and then being very mindful of, okay, what's mine and what's not mine. And just knowing myself very well to where I can stop and be like, I don't think this is me. And the minute I can ask that question, I can be like, okay, release, you know, what's mine can stay, what's not must go, and just send it into the earth to be cleansed. A lot of people like to do return to senders, but I don't, because I feel that I'm a transmuter, where I'm like, you don't need to carry that. I don't need to carry that. Let's nobody deal with it and just wash it away.
Dump it away.
Yeah.
And you definitely have empath tendencies. So this must have been, and I don't think anybody gets into the kind of counseling that you do without having that big heart and probably some empathic skills. So, but do you feel like that was an added layer of things that you had to be aware of and had to train for?
Definitely. Definitely. Cause, it is, you know, deep emotions, and I can't take those on for them. And that was something I had to learn about my boundary setting, is knowing I am your guide, but it's not about me giving you my light. It's showing you how to light your own candle in the darkness. So I'm giving you the tools to create your match, but I'm not going to constantly give you my matches to light your candle. And so learning how to do that was the hardest part, because obviously you see someone in that space and you want to be like, I'll light your candle, I got you, don't worry, and that's not sustainable.
And that's why we see so many people burn out, you know, in in social services or in nursing healthcare, because they, you know, and how amazing would the world be if everybody kind of got taught these skills so that they can do the things that they were called to do without it exacting that personal toll that you're talking about.
Yes.
Wow.
It would, I mean, that's the dream, right? That we can all get there. And, you know, some days it works and some days it doesn't. And one of the hard parts, which I'm grateful for my teaching background, because, you know, when you're teaching kids, you can't force them to learn. You can give them the resources, yeah. You can give them the lecture, but if they choose not to listen to you, like, okay, even if I shout in your ear, what, it's not gonna change it. And it's the same thing. If people don't want to do the work, I'm not gonna expend my resources making you. So all I can do is leave the tools at your feet and then be like, you know where to find me. Just light your little light from these tools that I've given you and I'll come back. And
unfortunately or fortunately, that is a phase to, you know, enlightenment or whatever we want to call it, where there is the resistance, where you're present for the conversation because there's something in you that says, this is the conversation I need to be having, but there's still like all of this resistance. I know I went through that probably 2 or 3 years of it, of just outright saying, Nope. I turned away from all of this when I was a kid. I'm not doing it. Damn it. I'm doing it. But it took me a while to get to that point. So then there's also there's the knowledge that most people are probably not going to be able to onboard it. But then there's also the knowledge that their soul heard you. Their soul took in that information. And then at some point, something will pivot in them and their soul will be able to make use of those tools. This is why I actually listen to like meditations, like guided meditations when I'm asleep, because I was like, oh geez, just let my self-conscious do it. Like I'm out of time. I don't have enough time in the day. So just talk to my soul for a while and let me wake up a millionaire, please. Just let's get there. But it can be frustrating, you know? And I found that, I think Jenny and I were just talking about this, that one of the weird things that I've always been able to do was when somebody comes to me for business consultation, I would just know the steps, even if I didn't know anything about their business. Like I was just channeling the information and then they wouldn't do it.
It's so frustrating.
You know, you wasted my time, you wasted my channeling, but people are going to do what they're going to do when they're ready for what it is that they do. But I always feel like with death, that's got to be the toughest area, because you know, death and trauma, right? And they're all bound in together because now they're confronting the trauma. But there's this definitive moment in their heads anyway, that like, I don't know, it just seems really combustible. And is there anything more fiery than that moment?
So it's funny you say that. You would think. But that's, in my experience, for me, I can't speak to anyone else, that's not how it is. And I admit that's part of my resistance that I had for getting into this, was I'm like, oh my God, I don't want to deal with people yelling at me and being upset and like, People are so, I'm going to use the word happy, but I think to meet someone that they can have these conversations with. And the minute you say, well, I'm a death doula, and you own that, it takes away, you know, they have the initial questions, and then it takes away all of those walls that we've built up socially where it's like, this makes people uncomfortable and I can't say these things and I have to put this down, whatever.
Not you.
Not me. Immediately it's like, here's someone who is trained, who knows how to listen, who is not going to get squeamish or uncomfortable or tell me like, oh, I don't get close off. I can share all this with you and it's going to be okay. And so there's often the conversations, while very deep, are so freeing for the person that.
And beautiful.
It's beautiful. There's often a lot of joy mixed into it, because even as we're unpacking the things and bringing up the trauma, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know that that's what it was. I didn't know that that's why I wasn't connecting to my husband. I didn't know that that's why I wasn't feeling this, was because of this thing that I've been carrying that I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And I always say, I'm a coach, not a therapist. And so all of my clients, I make it very clear. One, I cannot medicate you. Two, I am not licensed in that way. I am certified to be a coach, which means, yes, we're going to talk and I'm going to listen to you, but I'm going to be giving you tools and I'm going to make you do things. And if you don't want to do the work, I am not for you. You need to go down to a therapist where you can just talk air out your problems and do things, and they'll just listen to you and not make you do anything. I'm going to call you out on your crap and make you do things.
Yeah.
So you come to me when you want to actually change behavior.
Because she's a catalyst, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
And I imagine the people who find you are the people who want to be working on that soul level. It's funny how those things work out.
So. Yes.
Well, wow. Golly, Mel, I mean, how fantastic. Yeah. I learned so much. Like, you've been a friend of me for a long time. But I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. So kind of you to come and share all of this wisdom and just your general awesomeness with us.
What a doozy of a first guest.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
Seriously.
Yes. We're
Jenny,
thrilled.
I'm so excited for you starting this journey. I'm just going to say, wait until you start, I don't know what the term is, where you start smelling things. That is a very prominent one I have. So like Trey said, I have all the clairs, which I didn't realize that not everybody did have all of them. So I can see the future. I can hear things, the clairaudience, the clairvoyance, the clairsentience. And then the one is the smell. So I can smell entities and energies. And it's really weird. I thought I was having a stroke when it started, but sure not.
Interesting.
Hey, okay. Can I ask, Mel, did you make toast this morning?
I didn't.
I was going to bring up the toast.
Because I got this overwhelming smell of toast and I couldn't find it. So now I'm wondering, like, did Mel make toast this morning? And I was just like, she's just, her energy was coming into the podcast.
As of toast? I did not make toast this morning.
All right. I guess it was a stroke then. All
darn
right.
It.
Things we shouldn't joke about. And yet we do, because that's, you have to have a sense of humor about this stuff.
Gallows humor is important.
Absolutely. Wow.
Well, we're gonna just say thank you and express our gratitude. And
thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank
this
you.
This was amazing.
You.
Yeah.
And everybody, in the show notes, we will have Mel's contact information. So I don't know, maybe you'll get lucky enough to get a tarot reading from her. Ooh la la.
Yes.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. It was wonderful to meet you. You were fantastic.
Cheers.
Cheers. Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Melissa Koons is a writer, business owner, and has a passion for supporting others on their healing journey through her coaching and psychic work. Melissa works as a communications professional, tutor, relationship coach, grief coach, death doula, tarot reader, and is an ordained minister. When she's not working, she's taking care of her cats and turtles and exploring the adventures of life. You can find her at magnificentmusings.com.